AgriTalk is brought to you by Simplot Grower Solutions. We're in your fields and by your side. Learn more at SimplotGrowerSolutions.com. Happy Good Friday, everybody. Thanks for making time for AgriTalk. Hey, the markets are closed, but AgriTalk is still delivering the good stuff. Dairy producers, heads up here. We're getting to know the new face of dairy exports.
From Good Friday afternoon via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we will talk with Krista Harden from the U.S. Dairy Export Council. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis. Hey, happy Easter, everybody. The markets are closed, but we are here. We have got the goods for you, and we have got an awesome conversation coming your way with Krista Harden from the U.S. Dairy Export Council. You know how I know that it's awesome?
How do you know?
Because I had it earlier this week, and I've listened to it a couple of times.
Oh, you've listened to it a couple of times. So
yeah.
It's worth putting in reruns. Huh?
You know what? When we get to the bottom of the hour and we restart the conversation, Krista's got some interesting comments about the market with Mexico. You know, we always talk about how great that market is and how wonderful the trading relationship is that we have with Mexico. There's some bumps, dude. There are some bumps in the road on this one.
All right.
Nothing that can't be fixed. When we're talking about bumps in the road and a $2.25 trillion infrastructure package, of course we can fix a few bumps in the road.
Cut a check. It'll be fine. We'll print more money if we run out. Who cares?
That's exactly right.
You know, I'm such a huge fan of dairy. Maybe later on in the show, I can share my feelings about dairy with you and the beloved.
You know what?
Audience.
I'm looking forward to that. Uh-huh. I'm looking forward to that. It's a very interesting market and one that the entire industry knows is going to go through some changes. But they know what those changes are probably going to look like. They're prepping for it now. It's a challenging time, yes, price-wise on the farm. But in the development of these new products, it's a very exciting time in dairy. It really is.
Oh, very good.
Really is.
Yeah. Outstanding.
Okay, man. What do you say we get to it with some news?
Well, wheat was caught in a bad spot last week, Chip. Technically, the market acted like it wanted to trade lower, but sharp midweek gains in corn and soybeans tried to pull wheat prices higher. When the markets settled yesterday, July hard red winter wheat 9¾ cents lower, 572. July soft red down 5¼, 610.5. September spring wheat 13.5 cents lower on Thursday's close. That's at 616, Chip.
Yeah, and a couple of other things were at work in this market, I think. The Russian price continues to pull back because of the export tax that they've got on it there, Davis. I mean, they're trying to get their price low enough so that when the tax is added, they're competitive. And it's a fine balancing act when you look at what's happening with the U.S. dollar, which has been trading to the upside, making it tougher for the U.S. to get in there. You look at that, and then it's the freight costs out of the U.S. compared to the freight costs out of the Black Sea. And there's really no comparison there. So it's not like the Russian wheat price has to fall apart to stay competitive because of the dollar and the freight costs, but there is some work to be done there. On the week, get this, on the week, July SRW wheat was up a penny and a quarter. July hard red was down 2.5, and September spring wheat fell 15 cents from the previous week.
Yeah. Wow. Well, Chip, the feature in the corn market this week was March 1 stocks coming in about 65 million bushels below trade expectations, and corn planting intentions coming in about 2.5 million acres below trade expectations. Here's how the corn market closed yesterday. May corn futures 4.5 cents lower, 559¾. July down 2¼, 545¼. These corn close at 484¼. Now that one's up 7 cents on the day.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Big divergence between the old and the new crop markets happening. I'm a little concerned about the technical performance that we saw in the new crop corn contract this week. Obviously, Wednesday, big push to the upside. That session high close in a limit up performance gapped higher yesterday. We did close above the opening range, which is very important. Mm-hmm. But in the overnight, we spiked to a new contract high and then came back and closed below that old contract high, which was made back on March 8th at 485 3/4. So it feels like a breakout move to the upside, but when you look at the chart, maybe you got to pull back just a little bit on your bullish mm-hmm. enthusiasm. May corn mm-hmm. on the week up 7 1/4. December corn on the week up 18 cents.
Well, the bean market showed us yesterday just how much the new crop market has underperformed over the past few months. Old crop beans gave back a chunk of Wednesday's limit up performance, while new crop futures posted a new contract high. When the bell rang at the end of the day yesterday, May bean futures 34 3/4 cents lower, 1402. Mm-hmm. July down 31, 1396 3/4. But watch this. November bean futures closed at 1263 3/4, up 7.5 cents, Chip.
Okay, you think that's impressive. Watch this. Mm-hmm. On the week, May soybeans up 1.5 cents. Can you believe that? Talk about a round trip. A big round trip to go nowhere.
Right.
November soybeans up 56.5.
Looky there.
That's how much that new crop contract has been underperforming. We've talked about it so much that it feels like it, you know, it felt like beans, new crop beans, had to make a bigger move to buy more acres than what they had done. And the planting intentions report played that out. Now, the corn bean price ratio, Dease corn versus no beans, is now at 2.61 to 1. That is putting some incentive out there in front of the bean market to bring some more bean acres in. But the question is it too little too late? So similarly, the new crop bean contract spiked to a new contract high, gapped higher yesterday, fell back, filled the gap. So, in other words, new crop beans were trading lower for a short period of time yesterday, came back to close higher, but still closed below the opening range. So, if I'm concerned about the failure to hold those early gains in corn, I'm mm-hmm. extra concerned about the inability to hold on to the early gains in soybean futures, Davis. So, a lot of work to do in that market.
Oof, gnarly day in cotton on Thursday. May cotton down 304 points, 77.84. December cotton down 233 points to 77.77, Chip.
Yeah, that was kind of a tough way to wrap up the week. And that market, honestly, was all over the place. It's got a lot of trade issues that it's dealing with and so on. But on the week, we had May cotton down 254 points.
Man. Well, cash cattle trade perked up a little on Thursday with some movement at 117. Still, April live cattle were down 95 cents, 120.02 1/2. June cattle up 35 cents, 122.55. April feeders steady, 143.87 1/2. Chip?
On the week, April live cattle down 7.5 cents. Not much of a move there. April feeder cattle down 1.25 cents.
And let's turn to the snout side, where big pork export sales helped the hog market trade higher. April lane hogs 72.5 cents higher, 101.77 1/2. June hogs up 1.25 cents to 106.32 1/2.
And on the week, April lean hogs up 97.5 cents. That market has been very resilient and pushing to the upside. We're going to be talking dairy exports with Krista Harden from the U.S. Dairy Export Council next, right here on AgriTalk.
You might already know that POET produces 2 billion gallons of bioethanol and 5 million tons of high-protein Dakota Gold animal feed each year. But did you also know we use the same process to produce a suite of other bioproducts, like purified alcohol for cosmetics and sanitizing products, renewable CO2, and oil for renewable diesel? The market for green products made from crops harvested right here in the Midwest is growing at an unprecedented rate. And that means even more reliable domestic demand for your grain. Farmers aren't just feeding and fueling the world. They are growing sustainable solutions that protect the environment and preserve our way of life for future generations. At Poet, we believe in the power of agriculture to meet the world's most pressing needs. Learn more at poet.com/products.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Tom Vilsack is in at USDA, which means that he has vacated the spot at the U.S. Dairy Export Council. Vilsack generally got high marks for the job that he did, especially for his focus on the Chinese and the Southeast Asian markets. There's momentum there that must be maintained. And fortunately, there's a familiar name that has stepped in and has hit the ground running at U.S. DEC. All right, joining us now, Krista Harden. She is the president and CEO of the U.S. Dairy Export Council. Krista, thank you so much for making time for us. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Jeff. It's great to be with you and your listeners.
All right, Krista, it's a familiar name to a lot of people that have been following what's going on in Washington, D.C. and farm policy. Krista has served as the Chief Sustainability Officer for Corteva and DuPont. She spent 7 years working with USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack at USDA in Vilsack 1.0. Nearly three of those years were as Deputy Secretary. Following that, she was Tom's USDA Chief of Staff and Assistant Secretary for Congressional Relations. You worked on implementing the 2014 Farm Bill when you were at USDA, right, Krista?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, led that effort. That was a lot of fun. And I, you know, your listeners can't see me, but I have air quotes saying fun.
Yeah, I believe it. But what a unique situation to be in. Tell us about that.
Well, it's fabulous. I am so honored and so excited. I never could ever predict this path. I guess none of us ever really can. But I think a lot of your listeners may remember that I grew up on a peanut farm in Southwest Georgia, and my parents are still there. That's home. So when I call home, it's to a farm family, to, you know, parents who understand and appreciate what it takes to make a living, you know, in agriculture. And my entire career, really working on Capitol Hill back as a, you know, young staffer back in the day and working on peanut issues and other things, all the way through my work on conservation with NACD and then into the administration where you kind of picked up, you know, my
yep.
work. I've always had a focus on, you know, farmers, helping farmers and ranchers stay on the land. I mean, that's my motivation, is really making sure that we are creating the situations that farmers can make money and run their businesses in a way that is profitable and, you know, doing it in a right way. And the export world is just, you know, that's the future. Our farmers are efficient, they're effective, they're impactful, and we produce more than we're going to consume in the U.S. You know, our population is, you know, is more stable than other populations around the world. And
right.
we can help feed them. We can provide nutritious, healthy products. And that's what really motivates me about this position is, you know, taking good things that we're doing here and then sharing them with the world. And along the way, we're helping some dairy farmers, too.
Okay. You know what? I think you're going to have to connect the dots for some of the listeners out there, Krista, because there are some that are on a dairy right now. It may be, let's just call it a smaller dairy in Wisconsin, and
mm-hmm.
they look at U.S. Dairy Export Council, and they hear their new leader saying, "I'm working to keep you on your farm." There are some that are going to have a tough time connecting those dots. Connect those for them. How does that work?
I'd be happy to. I think, you know, and some dairy farmers will say to me, even in my home state of Georgia, which is more of a fluid market, which we consume in the U.S., but one of every six tanker of milk leaves our country and goes, you know, in different products, you know, outside of the U.S. to different markets. So if that one tanker of milk stayed in the U.S. and didn't have a real home, that would make a difference in your milk check. So the point is that we are consuming, we're growing consumption here. There's a real interest in making sure that every household has dairy and dairy products in it. That work is not going to, you know, go away. We're going to continue to do that. But we do produce more than we consume in the U.S., and frankly, that's a lot of our agricultural products. I mean, we're good. Our farmers are really good. So even if your own farm, you know, does not, you don't see exports as impacting you directly, indirectly, collectively as an industry, exports or another market. It's giving a home to great products that we're not consuming in the U.S. It really continues to be an area. So we want dairy farmers to produce more, but, you know, we got to find a home for that product. And sometimes it's outside the U.S. I hope that helps a little bit for those who say, why export? You know, I'm growing for local. Terrific. I think that's great. But your neighbors down the road or in a different area, different, you know, part of the country may not be.
Right. Great job. Love that explanation. That's how markets work, and that's how global markets work. So, Krista, tell me, what kind of a shop did you inherit from Secretary Vilsack? Is it in pretty good shape there at USDC?
It is. You know, it's great. I always say when I took over, we're not broken. So it's really good to walk into a really well-oiled machine. You know, my former boss, I've worked directly for him 4 times. So I know him well. I know, you know, kind of culture that he builds, that kind of accountability that he wants, a connection to, you know, in this case, our members. And so it's been great. I started working as the chief operating officer last May. He needed some help and needed it quick, and he called on me. And, you know, you never tell your boss no. He's always your boss, and I don't care, you know, what your titles are. And I just love the mission, love what he had built. You know, U.S. DEC has been around for 25 years. The dairy industry came together and said, you know, we have products that we can export, and it really has grown and really flourished under Secretary Vilsack. And so inheriting something that is well-oiled machine, I'll say we have terrific staff, a great board. Our chair is a farmer from Texas. He's just, you know, a great dairy farmer who really gives us inspiration and, you know, a lot of direction. And we have, you know, processor members and cooperatives part of our membership. So we come together, we, you know, bring our farmers, you know, to the table, as well as their processors, as exporters, others, and, you know, along the trade chain, I should say, that really help us determine where and what we should be exporting. So he left me a pretty good gig, and I, you know, I just got to keep her going.
That's awesome. Good stuff. Okay, I want to talk. We've outlined how important exports are to the dairy industry, and if we're talking about dairy exports, we've got to be talking about trade policy. And yeah. I know that you're obviously well versed in it. And I'm curious if you've had an opportunity to talk about several different markets with U.S. Trade Representative Tai, and what that conversation would sound like if you've had it. Let's start with USMCA. What would be your message to Ambassador Tai about USMCA?
Well, I haven't talked with her directly. I mean, we've sent her formal communications, and I anticipate a sit down at some point. She's got a lot of issues to cover, but she is well aware of our interests, frankly, with Canada. And, you know, she did inherit this issue. She's aware of it. We're going to make sure that she doesn't forget it. You know, frankly, you know, Canada's where we have to be. It's not just our first focus on the fact that their allocation process of the tariff rate quotas, TRQs, just is not matching their commitments in the agreement. So they've really been playing games with TRQ administration rules. And we just, you know, we're going to have to hold their feet to the fire. And we have made that clear. I know that there are others in the ag sector that are talking about, you know, some of the nuances and issues they may have. But, you know, dairy is among the top, frankly, on the list for agriculture. So we, you know, the minute I have the opportunity to sit down with her and walk through some of the specifics, I will. But they're well documented at USTR through her confirmation process, and I'm glad she's in place because we really need to make sure that we work on these issues. And I look forward to having that conversation directly with her. Secretary Vilsack obviously knows him very well,
right?
And I'm sure that he will have conversations with her as well.
I've talked to a lot of people about Ambassador Tai, Krista, and I haven't had anybody say anything negative about her. They're really enthusiastic about working with Ambassador Tai. And that's true. The enthusiasm for Ambassador Tai is very high. And I think the enthusiasm for Krista Hardin as the new head of the U.S. Dairy Export Council is already strong, and it's building every day. When we come back, we'll get into some of the specific markets for U.S. dairy, starting with our next door neighbors. We are having a conversation with U.S. Dairy Export CEO and President Krista Hardin on a Good Friday edition of AgriTalk. It's time for headline news featuring headlines ripped from Pro Farmers First Thing Today. Happy Good Friday, everybody. There was no Pro Farmer FTT this morning with the markets closed. There is no question this week's planting intentions estimates created even more anxiety for the grain markets as we head into another growing season. Yesterday afternoon, we talked with Ed Valley from Empire Weather. That is a great opportunity to get one group's expectations for the growing season. Just download the AgriTalk app to get access to archive shows or go to agritalk.com. Give that conversation with Ed a listen. And hey, heads up, cattlemen. If you missed this morning's beef-flavored free-for-all with Greg Henderson, Scott McGregor, Cersei Peoples, Matt Deppy, and Ethan Lane, it's time to make a U-turn and head straight to the AgriTalk app to listen to some of the best perspective on market transparency I've ever heard. Hey, have a very happy Easter, everybody.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. Our name says it all. AgriTalk. What more do you need to know?
Welcome back to AgriTalk. It's Good Friday and the markets are closed. And I thought that this would be a great opportunity to have a conversation with the new CEO and president of the U.S. Dairy Export Council, Krista Hardin. We are right in the middle of the conversation and we're about to jump into some of the trade hurdles with Canada that still need to be cleared. With the TRQs in Canada, what impact is that having on the U.S. market right now?
Well, you know, it's just, you know, it's something that we had counted on, that we had thought we had addressed. There are issues. We knew it was going to be difficult. We knew that you know, this is not our first round with the Canadians on these type of issues. So it's just a lingering, pestering problem that we've had a hard time to getting to, you know. And so, you know, we got to hold their, you know, hold them accountable, frankly. So it does impact our market. Not as drastically as some of the other issues, but it does not open up things as we had anticipated and we had planned on, because really they just have not met those commitments, frankly.
Okay. All right. That's one partner of USMCA. We've got another partner in that. That's Mexico. What a great trading partner for dairy.
It is our number one market, and it has been. Its proximity. They like our products. A lot of products go there, but we really am having some concerns as well. You know, because it is our biggest market, it is so key to us. But they've been kind of advancing new compliance processes, meeting cheese standards. If those go forward, it'd be extremely burdensome. So we're, you know, just troubling is a word that comes to mind when I think about what might be ahead with Mexico. You know, and there's a number of issues here. It's not just USMCA. It's also their recovery from COVID. It was hit very hard. The economy's tough there, the peso. So on top of that, then problems with the agreement, we are really looking south. We're looking and working very hard on what's happening in Mexico. So that that definitely has to be issues of a major focus and certainly an emphasis of our time and effort through the agreement and otherwise, frankly.
Wow. Okay. So with even with that concern, Krista, there, Mexico still, even though it's our biggest buyer of U.S. dairy products, it still feels like a market that's got some growth opportunity in it, yes or no?
Yeah, I think so. I really do. I think that, you know, if their economy recovers, I will say it's a little more down the road. They have to recover. That's fair in other parts of the world as well, recovering from COVID. It's uneven. You know, I think our economy may rebound quicker than some of the others. But there is great opportunity in Mexico, and the infrastructure we have, the relationships, the history, the consumers like our products. You know, there's so much we really have to make sure that we continue to work there and grow there, frankly.
Okay. When we talked about growth opportunities with Secretary Vilsack, he always made sure that we talked about Central America and the potential in Central America. Where is that region on the priority list at the Dairy Export Council?
Well, it really is still high. I think the Secretary laid a lot of groundwork, and we made great strides there, been able to make focus there. It really has really good potential. There are pockets of great, you know, good hope there. We're going to continue to focus in the Americas. We have a big meeting, a membership meeting this spring, and we have a whole section bringing all parts of our business together to look at South and Central America. That kind of potential there, we believe it really does have opportunity for us in the future. You know, I like to say that Secretary Vilsack opened the door. It's going to be kind of a couple places, including the Americas. It's going to be my job to help lead us through those and really have a bigger stronghold. So I'm excited about what might, you know, be possible in several of these countries.
Excellent. Excellent. China, huge growth over the last 36 months, call it. Really feels like a market that has developed for us. What's the potential in China?
Well, right now, China is our third largest single country market, and it really plays, you know, a big job. And for the workhorses, I like to say, of whey in particular and lactose, those are two products that we really do have a good growing potential there as they rebuild their hog herds after the African swine fever. Certainly, there's a lot of hope there that will continue to grow. But there's some untapped opportunities there, too, that we're really focusing on. I want to focus on. One is milk powder and the other is cheese. We have small market share there. Let me think for skim milk powder, we're about 5.5%, and for cheese, it's only 6.34%, something like that. So lots of potential for growth. We're in great, you know, dialogue with the Chinese often about these products. We think their consumers want them. We want to make sure that we can get them in there. So even though it's developed in one sense of a couple of our products, I believe there's great opportunity for some of the others I just mentioned.
Okay, very good. What's working in developing the Asian market, not just China, include the rest of Asia? What's getting their attention and drawing them to U.S. dairy products?
One thing I would say is the industry made a real commitment by putting an office bricks and mortar in Singapore.
Okay.
So it sent a signal that says, hey, we're here for the long haul. We're serious about this region. We're serious about our partnership. This is not, you know, a come and go type of situation for U.S. dairy. We're here. We have a test kitchen. Our members can use it for meetings. We can have webinars and sessions whenever everything's open, I should say. But I think that signal to Southeast Asia, U.S. dairy is very serious about this region, and we're serious about exports. And I think that is going to make the difference. And, you know, it's about trust. It's about building reliability, saying we have high-value products. Our cheeses are now coming into their own. That's making a difference. We have a cheese guild that use that USA symbol on cheese that consumers want to look for. We're working with universities and chefs and others to really build out. You know, just to remind your listeners, Chip, we don't export at U.S. Dairy Export Council one drop of anything.
Right.
We are building the image, the reputation, that value of consistency of product, that trust. So that takes some time, right?
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, U.S. Deck has made those investments, and we're really, again, Secretary Vilsack opened that door, and we're going to push through it to show these consumers we're serious about their markets, we're serious about products they want and need. And that's why I'm just so excited about this. I really believe our future is bright.
Yeah, the Export Council is the relationship. That's what you're building.
Yeah.
And that's very, very important in that Asian market. Krista, you were all about sustainability before sustainability was considered cool. I know that you're going to continue that effort. How might the Biden administration's climate first approach to policy influence the future of the dairy industry?
You know, I'll tell you, and you said that, you know, I was a part of sustainability before it's cool, and I appreciate you recognizing that it has been kind of a commitment, this farm girl, knowing that our natural resources, we want to use it, but use them wisely. It's been a philosophy for my family and through my whole life and career. But I will say that dairy farmers, you know, have been part of the ag sector in the U.S. that have also been committed to being part of the environmental solution. You know, they did a life cycle analysis in 2007, long before any other sector was even looking at footprint issues, even thinking about what that might mean for an industry. They set ambitious goals last March. The members of the Innovation Center for Dairy came together. These are CEOs of our major voices in dairy and said, we're going to set our goals. We're going to define ourselves. We're going to decide who we are as an industry going forward. That is a marketing issue for us. I can talk about that in any market around the world. And our partners, trading partners, listen. They want to know. Our competitors are using sustainability really as more and more as a marketing issue is in fact. So we have to, you know, we have to know what they're doing and make sure we're talking about the same things. So I really think it's kind of meeting that global demand and kind of keeping pace, frankly, with our competitors as they increasingly talk about sustainability as a major issue. I want to make sure, you know, we're going to be that source of choice. We've got to be very honest and accountable on these issues. I just am thankful the U.S. dairy industry recognizes that. You know, we don't have all the answers, Chip. There's science that's needed. There's, you know, new technologies that are, you know, emerging that we're going to have to use. But we're not letting others, you know, define U.S. dairy. We're doing it. And I'm very pleased and proud of this industry's kind of proactive approach. They admit what they don't know. They admit where they have, you know, issues they need to work on. But yet they're embracing them and working together, bringing other partners to the table. You know, you've probably seen so many announcements of folks, you know, multinationals, environmental groups, others that are coming to work with us. Dairy farmers need support and help. It can't be just out of their pockets. We know that.
That's right.
I'm excited to continue the work, but also with being able to go to, you know, a trading partner in another part of the world and say, have you looked at U.S. Dairy's commitment?
Yeah.
Do you see what they're doing? I'm excited about being that spokesperson, that voice, that flag to say U.S. Dairy has great products. They also want to be an environmental solution.
That's awesome. Good stuff, Krista. And it was fantastic to get to have a conversation with you, get to know you a little bit. I know that we will be having many more conversations as you spend time there at the U.S. Dairy Export Council. Thank you so much, Krista.
Thank you, Chip. I really appreciate the opportunity, and I know we'll have a lot of conversations.
You bet. We'll be back with more AgriTalk here in just a moment.
You can't see us, and we can't see you, so don't go changing. Listen just the way you are to AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me.
Hello.
Great conversation there with Krista Hardin, the CEO, president of the U.S. Dairy Export Council. Wow. It's such a huge job, Davis.
Yes.
And Here's the deal. Here's why that position is so important for the U.S. dairyman. It's because if you make a mistake in that position and you ruin a relationship with an importing country or a business inside of one of those countries, you're doing damage that's going to be very difficult to recover from.
Sure.
So you look at the people that they put in that position. Tom Vilsack before Krista, obviously, the importance of that position is well respected, and they're doing everything that they can to build that export market for U.S. dairy products. It's fascinating stuff.
Absolutely,
me.
Yeah. Well, and I gotta say, you know, for my part, I'm doing my part for the dairy. I drink milk every day. You know, yogurt is a big part of my life.
Really?
You know, you eat it, you can take a bath in it if you get enough. It's hard to get that much all at one time, but but it can be done. I had cheese on a ham sandwich just earlier. You know, you add a slice of cheese and all of a sudden now it's not just a ham sandwich. It's, hey, there's cheese on it.
Right. Right.
I don't know if that helps, but, you know, these are ideas. I'm hoping I'm making somebody hungry for some dairy out there. Drive a little domestic demand, you know? You know what I'm saying?
Domestic demand. You know what? Earlier this week for Farm Journal, I did a webinar and we talked export demand, but we really focused on developing the domestic demand for dairy products. Mm-hmm. And Eve Pollitt from DMI, she's a strategic thinker for DMI, was talking about how specialized some of the products may be, or I should say will need to be, going forward to really build that product. Go ahead. Feel free. Mention the specific yogurt that you eat.
I do Wee. I eat some Anderson Ericsson from time to time. I even like the Greek yogurt, the Chobani.
Okay. Very good. Very good. Now, each of those yogurts have different characteristics.
Yes, they do.
And you obviously want a variety in the yogurt that you choose, but there are people out there that are looking for something very, very specific in their yogurt. And if they are not getting it, they are voicing their dissatisfaction with not being able to get it. But it may be such a small batch that needs to be run to satisfy the needs of that consumer. But if that consumer is voicing the desire, there are other consumers out there that are looking for the same product. They just need to be identified. And the product needs to be produced for them. It's the niche development of very specific dairy products. Very unique dairy products that that may be the future of building the domestic dairy market. It's fascinating to me, dude.
Well, and when you say that, you know, if I'm thinking about it, when I go with the Anderson Ericsson yogurt, right? I like to go with the orange cream, the key lime, vanilla, lemon, right? No fruit
citrus.
In there.
Citrus.
If I'm gonna get fruit in there, I reach for the Chobani. Because I love the peach, the Wee is almost like treat yogurt. It's so good, and they make a maple variety that I specifically look for at my grocer, because it's like if pancakes had whipped cream and frosting on them. It's so delicious, and so indulgent. So I think you're exactly right. I'm a niche consumer. I've got a whole line of niche yogurt products that I stock for myself regularly. And if I don't see them, how am I supposed to buy them?
Right. Right. You yourself are a study of what the future of dairy products in the U.S. looks like. Satisfying those very unique, specific,
yes,
needs, wants, desires in that product is what the domestic dairy industry is going to be looking at. I think it's fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the other thing that one thing that is enabling, and we all know about data. If you go online and do some shopping, somebody someplace knows that you are online buying something very specific.
Oh, they know.
They know. So this accumulation of data is helping to identify those very specific products that people are looking for. And you know what else is being used is Google search.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How many people are Googling maple flavored yogurt to put on my pancakes?
Right. Yep.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So if they see enough of that, then all of a sudden product development kicks in, and that very unique look at what is available out there, or the very unique production of the product,
right,
kicks in. I think data and the desire for consumers to be more demanding.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
That's what I was just going to say. Think how blessed we are in this nation that we have such... I not only have a couple of different brands to choose from, I have different flavors. Some have fruit and some don't. I don't know if I want the fruit or not. You know, there are places where it's just like, wow, if we can get yogurt, I would take whatever flavor you got.
Yep.
You know?
Yep. Exactly.
And it's also so cool that we've got a dairy industry that's able to stay nimble and deliver that.
So ask for products. That's the bottom line.
Yes.
That's the bottom line. What I want, for one thing, is a quote-unquote Swiss cheese that melts even quicker.
Oh. Okay. Quick-melting Swiss cheese.
I mean, we can get that picky. We can get that picky because, doggone it, we're American consumers, and we know what we want. Happy Easter, everybody. Glad that you could join us today. Come back Monday morning. Conversation with Machinery Pete right here on AgriTalk.